We are joined by the great Matt Barrows, 49ers beat writer for The Athletic, who is on hand for the 49ers rookie minicamp. Matt Barrows saw how they moved around on the field. We'll see how they fit and some big picture offseason questions for the 49ers heading into 2022. All that coming up on today's episode of Locked On 49ers right now.
You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers. Brian Peacock and Eric Crocker with you at BD Peacock, at Eric underscore Crocker, and at Matt Barrows, the great Matt Barrows of The Athletic. It's been a little while, Matt, and I appreciate you jumping on with us here to talk little rookie minicamp. I haven't talked to you since before the 2021 season, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while. I thought we would get a little draft talk in there, but I guess we'll get some post-draft talk.
Yeah.
And I have to start out by giving Peacock a little shout-out here. This was day one of the draft, and, of course, the 49ers don't have any picks, so we're all in the media room with nothing to do. And the draft is starting, and, of course, it's Trent Baalke and the Jaguars on the clock, and the question is, oh, who do they go with, Aiden Hutchinson or Trevon Walker? And I'm thinking to myself, let's just look at their arm length. That'll decide it. And there's a huge discrepancy in the arm length. Trevon Walker's arms are notably longer than Aiden Hutchinson's. And I'm thinking, that's it. It's going to be an easy answer. And so I put out a tweet that said, that showed the arm length. And I said, 49ers fans know who Trent Baalke's taking. And I got a lot of attention, but I got a lot of scolding that said, oh, Brian Peacock's been on that for months and months and months. You're just stealing that from Brian Peacock. And apparently I was, although in my defense, I didn't know I was stealing, but I felt like, okay, the next time I talk to this guy, I'm going to have to give him his just desserts for hitting that, albeit obvious if you're a 49ers fan, but still, I mean, there was no question once you saw the arm lengths next to each other.
Yeah, I appreciate the recognition. Yeah, when I saw the short arms for Aiden Hutchinson, I thought, man, I don't think that's a Trent Baalke guy if he's really the one making the decisions in Jacksonville. And I wasn't sure if he was going to be the top of the pyramid there as far as the drafting and decision-making goes. It was like, that is not a Trent Baalke guy. And then you see Trevon Walker. And I saw some reps from Trevon Walker at Georgia, where he had a little Alden Smith look to him, where he would, you know, use those long arms and big hands and the strength and go right through an offensive tackle and push him into the quarterback's lap. And I was like, you know what? I bet he's got visions of Alden Smith, and he was in the 49ers draft room when they drafted Alden Smith. And this was early on in the process, when post combine, when Trevon Walker was really starting to jam up the draft boards for a lot of folks. And I was like, just why not put him up at number one? Because he is a Trent Baalke guy through and through. And then at post-draft, I didn't call this one, but I was actually on today's episode of Peacock and Williamson on Monday. We did the AFC South, and I was looking at the whole draft haul by the Jaguars. So I think Trent Baalke probably sees a little bit of Alden Smith with his first pick, but then I think he might see a little bit of Patrick Willis with the linebacker he went up to get in the first round, right? And then they doubled up on linebackers, Chad Muma, in the third round. So I
Chris
bet
Warland, you saw a little Chris Warland there.
I think he's trying to put together the Alden Smith, the Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman defense together.
Oh wow! Jaguars.
When you look at that first round linebacker, third round linebacker, and high first round defensive end with a little speed to power.
Well, with Baalke, his, you know, the big criticism with him is that he was always trying to swing for the fences. You know, this is why the ACL guys in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds, he didn't take a lot of singles. Which is, you know, good and bad sometimes. But yeah, I think Hutchinson was the safer of the two picks, and Walker was the home run shot. And so that's that, you know, you can't escape who you are. And that's Trent Baalke. I mean, you're right. This was a vintage Trent Baalke draft.
Crocker does a great Trent Baalke impression. Croc, do you want to try to?
I can do that because it's not too far off from mine. You know, got that raspy voice and stuff. Yeah, you know, we saw Trevon Walker and we just knew we had to have him. Talk there you go. Like that.
I like it.
He looks like the San Francisco 49er. Okay, Eric, you can do all your imitations, but you're not going to get it right.
Matt, I think he said they're going to run the football. Was that you, Matt, that Balky was answering the question for, or was it the other Matt?
No, it was me. Okay. Yeah, I forget exactly what the question was, but there was a lot of stammering from the head coach, and Balky cut in and said, "I think what he's trying to say is we're going to run the football."
Who was the coach at the time? Was it Tom Sula?
Tom Sula. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It was a bad
sign of things to come. It was an omen.
Unbelievable era. But the 49ers, I think, took a little swing from the fences with their first pick, second round, number 61 overall. Did you get a peek at the 49ers' new pass rushers wearing number 95 as a rookie? Was he on the field? And did you get a look at his athleticism firsthand, Matt?
Well, not really, because there were exactly two defensive linemen there. It was him and Kevin Atkins from Fresno State. And so they didn't do a lot of 11-on-11 stuff. There wasn't any one-on-one pass blocking with the offensive linemen. So they were basically doing drills the whole time. I will tell you, in my impression of Drake Jackson, and this is totally explainable, is that he had his arms in the air.
Oh, yeah.
Like this from like 10 minutes into practice on. And I feel bad for him and Atkins because they had these two psycho coaches, Kasarik and Daryl Tapp, who's Kasarik's assistant there. And they're cut from the same cloth in that they've just, you know, limitless energy, and they're always yelling. And they had these guys doing that drill that you see them doing quite a bit, which is just firing off the line. I mean, that's what it's about for Kasarik. So those two poor guys were getting the attention that normally like 12 to 15 guys get, but it was just two of them. So they were pretty gassed from mid practice onward. So there wasn't a lot of athleticism. They did run a hoop drill. You know, they run around a big arc, and they have to pick up, a towel and then a football. And, you know, that's Drake Jackson's forte right there. That's his wheelhouse. He's got excellent, excellent bend, really bendy ankles and, you know, hips and everything that you want. And you're right. It is at pick number 61. There's a lot of upside there. And that's the beauty of that pick. And then the hesitation is that he didn't always see all those skills on the field, and he would disappear for long stretches of the game. So that's where Kasarik and Tapp come in. Pardon the pun, but to tap into that athleticism and have it be consistent throughout a career.
Hey, Matt, is that like a new thing where there's not a lot of guys at rookie minicamp, or is that something that the 49ers have been consistent with? Because during my time with the New York Jets, I mean, they brought in all kinds of guys that they had no intentions on signing, but it was enough for a two-deep roster on both sides of the field during rookie minicamp. Seems like the 49ers, they haven't done that. Is that something new with like maybe a newer CBA or something they just done?
I'm trying to remember like last year's everybody was so focused on Trey Lance, even if it was like a 7-on-7 camp like this one on Friday was. I'm not sure we took notice like we did. It wasn't too deep by any stretch. And there were a decent amount of receivers and defensive backs. So it was it was a 7-on-7 camp. The offensive linemen, there were six offensive linemen altogether, but they never got into it, certainly against the defense. So, it may have been just sort of the luck of the draw with just two defensive linemen. I mean, they're so heavy at defensive line in terms of their veterans. We can go over the numbers, but there's just a lot there. So they obviously didn't need to bring in a lot of undrafted free agents and rookies and whatnot. So I think that's probably the bigger issue that was happening on Friday.
Yeah, there's a few deep position groups, Matt, that I want to talk about next. And they doubled up on a couple of positions for two straight years, which is very curious. So I want to get your thoughts there and ask you who maybe stood out above all other rookies at that rookie mini camp. But first, I want to tell the folks out there about Built Bar. Imagine dipping your fingers into a plastic tub of birthday cake frosting. then opening up your eyes and realizing that was only 150 calories and 16 grams of protein. That's what it's like to eat the birthday cake puff bar from Built. And those puff bars are the first ever protein infused marshmallow. And I just received a box of birthday cake puffs. I know Eric Crocker just received a box. We got to get some over to Matt Barrows too, because I know he's a big high protein, low calorie, low sugar guy. And I bet he'll like that birthday cake puffs. Birthday cake puffs are not covered in 100% chocolate, but there are many flavors of Built bars that are covered in 100% chocolate. And that's why you reach for the Built bars, because they're healthy for you. But if those healthy treats don't taste good, you're not going to reach for them. And you will reach for the Built bars because they are fantastic. And you really do feel like you are getting a treat. So make every day your birthday with Built's newest flavor, birthday cake puffs, at Built.com. And you can get 15% off your order at Built.com. Just go to the website, Built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Again, that is promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Thanks again, everybody, for making Locked On 49ers your first listen every day. Make sure you head over to the Locked On NFL YouTube channel, not only to see the Locked On NFL podcast, but also the Peacock and Williamson NFL show daily. And that is the new home of Peacock and Williamson on YouTube on the Locked On NFL channel. And you got to check out Croc doing Locked On NFL Draft Daily as well. There's no offseason for real fans, and there is no offseason for the Locked On Podcast Network. Matt, put you on the spot here. Who won the weekend? Was there any rookie that stood out that was like, okay, I see why the 49ers liked that guy. He just looked different than everybody else.
Yeah, like I noted, it was basically a passing camp. So it sort of it was good for fast guys. Kind of show off their speed. And so the fastest guy out there was Danny Gray, and he did not disappoint. I mean, he caught, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 passes, including, you know, 3 or 4 deep balls down the left sideline. One of them was, you know, that typical Lynn Swan, John Stallworth, 9 route for a TD. So, I mean, that's exactly why they drafted this guy. And he was doing it with Brock Purdy and some rookie quarterbacks. So that's a great sign, I think. I remember, I forget when it was I started looking at these guys, but I realized, okay, if they're going to draft a receiver, it's going to be a fast receiver. So who are the fast receivers? And there were a lot of them, a lot of sub 4.4 40s at the combine this year, but not all those guys looked sub 4.4 when you watched them on tape. Bayless Jones, for example, is another guy that they were interested in, and he does a lot of interesting things. He was a Tennessee receiver. He's probably better with a ball in his hands than Gray is, but he was not, didn't show the speed, even though he ran like Danny Gray did at the combine. But Gray was good all over the field, and, you know, kind of accelerated away from defensive backs when he had the ball in his hand. Really good at kind of tracking the deep ball. Just seemed like a football player with speed instead of a track guy who was trying to play football. So, it was a very brief first look at him, but he passed. And then the other guy whose speed jumped out was Alubi. And I'm not sure how to say his first name. It's S-E-G-U-N, but he's one of the undrafted guys. He played at San Diego State. He's just this new type of linebacker, maybe 220, 225 pounds, but he ran his 40 and 4.45 at San Diego State at the pro day. And that showed up. I mean, it was just in drills and things like that, but the guy can move. And you think of, you know, what kind of linebacker is going to make this squad, you know, with one of those last spots, and it's going to be somebody who can handle special teams. And so this guy, you know, right off the bat, seems to have the traits to be a really good coverage type of guy.
I think hearing Danny Gray did good, that's encouraging for me, because, you know, when I was watching him, you can see that he was fast with the ball in his hands. But, you know, we talked about, like, in route, I didn't think he played to that speed. But to see him, you know, being able to create that separation against guys, albeit, you know, rookie minicamp, but you got to pass the first test. That's the first test right there. And he did a good job with that. And, you know, we talked about it, Peacock and I, where I said, man, I'm watching him, and, you know, he can be Mike Wallace, who is a speedster, or he can be AJ Jenkins, who ran a fast 40 time and didn't have a catch as a 49er, who was a first round pick. So, you know, I hopefully he's closer to Mike Wallace than he is AJ Jenkins.
Well, he's already better than AJ Jenkins because I distinctly remember AJ Jenkins rookie camp. And like I said, this is non-contact camp. And Jenkins was on the ground like every other play. Like he couldn't keep his feet in a non-contact camp. And that always stood out to me. If you can't, you know, keep your feet there, how are you going to do it when the pads go on? That's a really good, I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, like I said, it's so early. We just saw the guy, but that was a good first indication that he's going to be better than AJ Chang.
Awesome.
Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, you want to at least look like you belong when you show up there. You want a first round pick that's just like got frying pans for hands or something like that. Or like AJ Jenkins couldn't even stand on his feet, right? That was one of the big things. He kept falling over trying to run around.
Yeah. He was not good. Although I do remember stories of Jerry Rice dropping a lot of passes early on in his rookie year and them thinking that they just blew that pick. And then something happened, something clicked, and he was lights out from the second half of that season through the next two decades. I read somewhere that he went to the Hall of Fame or something like that. Yeah, he did pretty well.
Yeah, he had two Hall of Fame careers. He had a Hall of Fame career before the age of, 32? And then he had another Hall of Fame career after that, after he tore his ACL. And it was pretty amazing what that guy was able to do. A little bit more John Taylor than Jerry Rice, I think, with Danny Gray. That was my comp when I saw him, just strides and the way he's running away from guys and, you know, catch and run type of stuff. So I know there's not a lot of banging at rookie minicamp or anything like that. Did you see anything from the rookie offensive linemen and even some of those undrafted offensive linemen? Because they drafted a couple of interior guys, the centers, or they signed a couple of centers after the draft as well. So Spencer Burford, Nick Zakel, there was Jason Poe West. What's his first name? Donovan West. And did you at least from an athleticism perspective see them moving around? Did they look like Kyle Shanahan offensive linemen, or are they trying to add some bulk? I mean, we're talking back-to-back drafts where they drafted two guards, and seemingly they want to bring in two third-round running backs that are bigger backs. So is there a change coming with the offense, and how do those guys look moving around out there without pads on?
Well, they look good. And the guy that I was most curious about was Jason Poe, who was a guard at Mercer, and Lenora Rhyme. And, you know, he ran an amazing 4.49. I actually brought this up with Poe, and he corrected me. He said it was a 4.89. So it was actually a little faster than what he was given credit for. But, you know, that catches your eye. And he was 300 pounds when he did that. There have been some offensive linemen who run really good 40s at the combine, but they're 285 or they're you know, significantly lighter than what an offensive lineman usually is. He was 300, ran it. The caveat is that he's 6 feet, you know, and is stocky. You know, the arms aren't that short, but a lot more compact than what you normally see from an offensive lineman. In fact, he looked more like a defensive lineman. He looked like Ian Williams, that sort of body type. Who is the guy they had here for a year, and then he and Buckner went to the Colts together? I can't remember his name, but they that body type, sort of short and squat. But anyway, I wanted to watch him and see how he moved and see how he looked next to a Spencer Burford and a Donovan West. And he didn't look out of place. I mean, he looked like he belonged there among the offensive linemen. He was playing guard. West was playing center. Burford was playing right tackle. So that's where they, I mean, again, they're going to play a lot of different spots, but that's where they had him lining up on day one. And they all look good. I mean, you know, to me, West is really interesting. If Alex Mack, when he's going to make his decision, but if he decides to retire, West, you know, basically has the most experience you know, certainly not NFL experience, but he played 2 years as a center. And all these other guys, Jake Brendel and Brunskill, and we'll probably talk about Nick Zakel a little bit, but none of these guys have been full-time centers. I guess Brendel has, but my point is that, you know, why not West? He seems to have as good a shot as any of these guys of stepping in.
And center position takes a little time to develop, and I'm sure it takes a little extra time even to develop in Kyle Shanahan's offense. So it felt to me like they were pretty confident that Alex Mack was going to be coming back this year, even though that press conference before the draft made it feel exactly the opposite. Did you get that same vibe?
Yeah, I mean, my vibe going into the draft was, okay, they're doing a Joe Staley here, and they know he's going to retire. So they're just kind of keeping it quiet now. You know, they can do what they need to do in the draft, and then right after the draft, he'll announce his retirement. Well, the draft was a couple of weeks ago now, and he still hasn't retired. So as we're moving away from it, my vibe, my tea reading is more so that he is going to come back. Or else why, if he's decided not to come back, why not just say it now? The bottom line is, I don't know. I thought I knew. But it seems like he's genuinely waffling on the matter. I mean, he played really well last year. He had his best season since, I don't know, 2013. I forget when his best season was before this. But I saw that and I thought, okay, this guy's not going to retire. He's still, you know, performing well. He's on a really good team. He's comfortable. He's back in his home state. But you know, you play that long and it's that taxing that you never really know. And you don't know what injuries they're dealing with, which was what, basically sent Joe Staley, who was still playing, performing really well, at the end of his career into retirement. So there are obviously some factors that, we don't know about that he's considering. And it may be that he's just waiting, to see how his body feels, this, that, the other, before making a final decision.
Sheldon Day was the name.
Sheldon Day. Thank you.
That's a good pull too. Yeah. Very like wider than he is tall kind of a build. And Jason Bowe is definitely built that way. And even seeing them in some of the clips I saw at minicamp, seeing them move around, it looked like they were trying to use Day as maybe a center, or at least just because that's what his workout partner was. And they kind of had West and Poe working as centers. And then it looked like next to them was, Gutierrez was there as well. Along with Zakel and Burford on the outside of them. And a couple of things seeing Poe is that he looks explosive, you know, in person too. And just in those, you know, this is very small sample and without pads, but you know, he got out of his stance very quickly and it looked like he was pushing his counterpart off the ball pretty furiously. And looks like it's pretty easy for him to win a leverage battle. And he does have shorter arms, but you know what I noticed about Poe though, is that, and maybe it's why he looks so good in those clips of him running out of the backfield and catching passes, he's got really big hands, which is key and maybe more important than arm length for a center. He's got 10 5/8-inch hands, I think. So we got really big
hands. We ever seen a 6 foot guard though?
I mean, the centers tend to be smaller. I grew up watching Washington and they had a center, Jeff Bostic. If he was over 6 feet, it wasn't that much more than 6 feet, but that was a long time ago. So I don't think it's unheard of, but you're right. I mean, it would definitely be unorthodox. I mean, to get to Brian's point, short arms, but also if you move your feet, I mean, if you're moving your whole body and able to, get in front of people, that's obviously a big help. And that's where he excels. Adam Peters was telling me that they saw him at the, you know, Mercer doesn't have its own pro day, so the Mercer players go to Georgia. And so Poe was there with two Georgia, who are typical size and, draftable offensive linemen. So they watched those three guys go through the workouts. And Poe was the best looking of that trio. He did not look out of place in that group. So that gave them a little bit more faith that he might be a good after draft signing.
All right, we got to talk a little bit more about the defensive side of the ball, those defensive backs specifically, and some big picture stuff with the 49ers this offseason heading into 2022. But I got to let the folks out there first know about Rock Auto. And why would you spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts than that you would find at a chain store or a car dealership that you could find at rockauto.com with such an amazing selection? And that selection always priced reliably low at rockauto.com. For example, let's say you're looking for a fuel pump for a Honda Odyssey. That fuel pump would be $353 from a chain store, only $216 at rockauto.com. And you can choose from an enormous selection, the exact part you want, and not just be at the whim of whatever happened to be at stock that some person behind the counter looking at a little green screen was telling you that was in stock at a chain store. So with all the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for those stores to stock everything that Rock Auto can. So get over to rockauto.com. Make sure you let them know that Locked On sent you, right? Locked On in there. How did you hear about us box at rockauto.com right now to see all the parts available for your car or truck. And we're talking everything, big parts, little parts, wiper blades, jumper cables. You need a new floor mat for your car. You can find it at rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Okay, Matt, two cornerbacks again in the 2022 draft. Guards, two guards in the 2022 draft. Third round running backs again in 2021 and 2022. So is this a sign, do you think, that the 49ers maybe missed on some of those picks? Or is just happenstance because there was no center drafted? They did bring in a couple of undrafted free agents that we talked about. Not really tackles. There's guys that played tackle in college, but it sounded like they kind of all figured in guard first that maybe had some tackle versatility. Two more corners, the running backs that I mentioned, even though the sixth round running back was better than the third round running back last year. Is it just that they're finding types and they're going after it? Are they trying to change the offense? Or are they telling us something about the 2021 draft that they might have missed on a few of those picks and they had to kind of redo it again in 2022?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Trey Sermon had been as good as Elijah Mitchell, they don't need to spend a third-round pick on a running back. He wasn't, and so he's a question mark. And I'm not saying that they've erased him from consideration, but they know that they can't count on it. Certainly, like they know that they can count on Elijah Mitchell. And to me, that position is just numbers. I mean, it's just reassurance, really. I mean, look at who they drafted. They drafted a huge guy, one of the biggest running backs in the draft, who's notable for being at his best at the end of games. Durability is such a key with that position group. I think that they wanted to bulk up the numbers and bulk up the position, and that, you know, that brings up the second part of your question: is are we seeing sort of a change in the sort of the profile of the offensive players? I think yes. I mean, I think Kyle Shanahan is realizing where his strengths are. You look at what Debo Samuel does and what George Kittle does and what Juwan Jennings does and what Mitchell really did really well at, I don't know, 207 pounds last year. And they're just going to go further in that direction. And I think that's sort of brilliant because you see these defenses and everybody's in nickel all the time and linebackers are 221 pounds instead of 251 pounds like they were 20 years ago, and you can exploit that. So I think that's the philosophy, and I think Danny Gray plays into that, you know, where you just run a team to death and they bring in that safety to stop you, and all of a sudden there's no safety back there and Danny Gray's off to the races for 85-yard bomb. So I think that's all kind of part of the same idea, general idea. And I think Trey Lance plays into that. I think Aaron Banks plays into that. List goes on and on and on. It's all theoretical at this point. We'll have to see it in practice. But I think that's the way the 49ers are going.
Zigging while everybody else is zagging. Let's throw a 230-pound running back at him, and then how about a 300-pound fullback in Jason Poe? Right. Yeah, just like go right. All in.
That'd be nice. Get Juszczyk and Poe in the backfield together. And run behind Trent Williams, and then all of a sudden, it looks like it's 1985 again.
Yeah. Not only an OW, be like an oh shit W.
Oh hell no, that's what it is.
Exactly. Oh, that's good stuff. So I mentioned earlier there was that little video clip, and Croc and I were talking today earlier, and we wanted to ask you, does it feel weird? Does it seem like the team right now is not really putting the PR push behind either quarterback, right, Croc?
Well, it's not even about the – they're not putting any PR, anything out there. And that was the thing that was kind of a little bit questionable to me as to why that is. You look around the NFL and, you know, other NFL media teams have put out, you know, just, hey, look, this is a rookie. Look at him run this route, catch the ball. This, you know, oh, look, we got Tua and we got Tyreek Hill, your new shiny toy. Let's put a little clip out of those two guys. But San Francisco 49ers, it's been like zero dark 30, man. I mean, there has been nothing like from their media team. And I'm talking about the, you know, the social media team. They haven't put out any, like, not even a 5-yard throw from Trey Lance, not even a catch from Danny Gray, who's your third round pick. There's been nothing. Is that by design?
Well, never underestimate an NFL team's paranoia and not, you know, in trying to keep. Remember, Trey Lance was the number 3 pick in the draft last year, and we could not interview the guy all season long. You know, there's a rule that says that, you know, every player has to be made available once a week. NFLPA has signed off on that. The NFL has, certainly the media has, no Trey Lance. So, I mean, it's goes back to them wanting to control this to the nth degree. I mean, every little facet of it. I mean, look where he worked out in the offseason, down with John Beck in Southern California. Why Beck? Well, because he's a Shanahan disciple. He knows the offense. He knows Adam Peters. So, I mean, this is all control freak, you know, par excellence. I mean, it's like to an nth degree here. And it bothers me to no end as a reporter who just, you know, wants to ask a guy a couple of questions. But I think that that's all, it's all part of that same idea that we want to, we're being so careful about Trey Lance. We want to control every little thing that comes out all the time. And of course that's impossible. And we've seen all sorts of rumors and this, that, and the other. But that to me is what is sort of behind that mystery.
It would seem like the team would really want to throw some, you know, just some very glamorous slow motion clips and not really giving anything away, not even being able to see how good of a throw it was, but just make your young quarterback look nice and get people excited about him and just have a positive narrative going with that player going into training camp. It would seem that way to me, unless the 49ers are actually really considering keeping Jimmy Garoppolo into training camp. They can't be
look at Peacock stirring the pot right now.
Are they really going to bring Jimmy to camp, or are they just waiting for that arm to be healthy before they can make some kind of a roster move, whether it's a trade or releasing him, or are they just afraid he's going to go run up to Seattle and end up being their starting quarterback?
Well, I mean, it's not going to be until, you know, my thing is that they keep saying late June. First it was early July where he's going to start throwing again. And then they change it to late June to make it seem not quite as bad. But let's just say it's July 1. That's when he takes his first pass. He's not full go. You know, my sense is that this is a guy that likes to be in the weight room. I mean, he's one of 4 boys. They're all sort of big, you know, former high school defensive players. Being in the weight room was like a big thing. And that's why he's 225 pounds or so. I think the shoulder surgery means that he's not in the weight room. I saw him in a video. He already looked a little thinner than he has. My point is that it's going to take a long time for him. These things always take so much longer than what they tell you initially. So I think it's going to be maybe starting to throw on July 1, but not back to kind of full strength until August 15. And I'd be very surprised if we ever see him in uniform in a preseason game, or, you know, unless there's some, you know, Trey Lance breaks his thumb or something happens. Let's knock on wood a little bit. you know, but yeah, that's how I see it going. He's going to be out of sight, not out of mind, but out of sight certainly for the spring, and my guess is for the beginning of training camp as well.
You had an interesting quote in your article today at theathletic.com, and it said, quote, "I always try to tell people," talking about the 49ers quarterback, "I always try to tell people his biggest assets and biggest strengths are all the things that nobody knows how to measure." And that sounds like a quote about Jimmy Garoppolo, but it was actually an article about the 49ers' seventh round pick, Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy. Are there some similarities there between the two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think so. Neither has a huge arm. This was his high school coach who said that quote, and he was explaining why he never really got a lot of buzz from major colleges. And one was that, and this is documented in the article, he had all sorts of issues his junior season. But two is that he just doesn't look like the prototypical NFL quarterback or big-time college quarterback. He's 6 feet. He's just a little bit over 6 feet and doesn't have the rocket arm. But he's good at extending plays, and he's smart, and all those things that you want. And I think, you know, part of the reason the 49ers liked him is because, you know, this is Trey Lance. Who's going to be a really nice compliment? Who do we want in that room with Trey Lance? Because everything is sort of feeding Trey Lance and trying to make him better. And this guy is, he's a film guy. He already does the virtual reality stuff. He's what you want in a backup quarterback. I mean, obviously, the paramount is, can he come in and win you a game or two if he needs to? But two is, you just want a good person. You want a hard worker and somebody who will kind of eagerly learn. And I don't want to say push Trey Lance, because I don't think he needs pushing, but just get that that vibe going in that room. It can only help. So I think that's largely why he was that choice there. I mean, he just seems like a really, really good guy. I love the part where, you know, Nick Saban offered him a scholarship. I mean, you got a scholarship to play quarterback at Alabama. And he's like, I don't like this guy. I don't like the vibe I got meeting with him. I like the atmosphere at Iowa State. I like the idea of going in there and turning a crappy program around. And that's exactly what he did. And I think the 49ers must have seen that and really kind of liked what they saw.
You know, Matt, I didn't want to touch on Trey Lance, but I do have one Trey Lance question. So heading into, I guess we can even start with the draft, right? There was a lot of buzz around him needing a lot of time, right? A guy that he's going to take time, develop. I mean, playing at the FCS level, just coming off of a COVID year where he didn't even play except for one game that he wasn't even like preparing to play in. Then all of a sudden he's doing it for his teammates and scholarships or something like that. So, you know, a lot of people were like, okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit. And then I hear some of the beat writers see Trey Lance, the start of training camp, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute. He's further along than a lot of people were expecting. He's making all the throws. When is he going to get first team reps? When did the narrative change from what everyone was seeing then, from guys that pushed back on the thought of Trey Lance, to now you hear a lot of just pushback from, I guess it's the organization or it's he say, she say, but there's a lot of kind of negative context surrounding Trey Lance's name right now for a guy that has very limited playing time.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the beginning of last year's training camp, he did look sensational. I mean, it was 10 straight days, really, to open camp, where he looked really, really good. What was behind that, I've learned since, is that, you know, they're trying to build him up. They're trying to build up his confidence as best they can. And he did a great job from spring to summer. So that was part of why he looked so good late July, early August. The other part was that Shanahan, you know, you can be listening to the head coach all throughout practices in training camp. It cuts off in a game. Right. But Shanahan was in his ear. And Shanahan was basically telling him what to do with the ball. Shanahan knew exactly what the defense was playing, what the look was going to be. So he knew where Lance should be going on every play. And so he was telling him. So, he basically had training wheels on. And then midway through training camp, training wheels came off. And so he seemed to go down a little bit.
Gotcha.
But I mean, this was part of the plan. This wasn't a shock to the 49ers that, I mean, if there was any shock, I think it was how well he did to begin that session. I think when he came back down to earth, that was more where they wanted to see him. The other thing that happened is that, you know, they had a plan for him. You know, we don't love his mechanics. You know, the base needs to change, the release point needs to change, but we're going to take this full rookie year to do all that. I mean, that's why we've got Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to take it along very slowly. And that was the plan. They stuck to the plan, but he got hurt. He got hurt a lot more than you would want a guy who gets scant playing time to get hurt. Remember, he broke his finger in that Raiders game, the last preseason game. That ended up being a lot worse than what everybody was letting on. This is part of the reason, by the way, that they're keeping him from the media the whole time. They don't want anybody to know what's going on behind the scenes. And then, of course, he got hurt. He hurt his knee in that game against the Cardinals. So my point is that all this work that he's doing that they mapped out from end of training camp to end of the season, we're going to have his base set. We're going to have his throwing motion set, this, that, and the other. It was more erratic because he wasn't able to practice for big swaths or because he was battling through an injury for big swaths. So it wasn't the smooth ride that everybody thought he was going to have. Now, this off-season stuff where the reports that they don't like what they're seeing, I don't know where that's coming from, because they're technically not able to see him until very recently. So I think that's all a bunch of BS, to be honest with you. We'll find out soon. I mean, May is not usually a time where you're thinking, oh, this is a critical part of the season. May OTAs, but I think it is for him. I mean, he needs to send a signal that I've got this. I can be the guy. And I think, you know, the coaches, the media, front office, that's one thing. I think it's the teammates that's even bigger. They need to see that he can be the guy, because if Jimmy Garoppolo is still on the roster, it's always going to be sort of in the back of everybody's mind. I know it's going to be in the back of the public's mind. I think we'd be foolish to think that it isn't in the back of a veteran player who realizes they've got a window right now to win something. Why is Jimmy Garoppolo just sitting on the bench here? So I think a really strong spring, May and June, for Trey Lance are going to be really big.
Yep.
That is the kind of insight you could get if you subscribe to theathletic.com and read Matt Barrows every day. Find him on Twitter at Matt Barrows. Matt, always a pleasure, and we appreciate you carving out some time for us today to talk 49ers.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm sure you guys are going to send me some of those protein-infused marshmallows. They sound delicious. Oh, man, you got them right there?
Yeah, we got boxes of them over here.
Have you guys tried doing s'mores with them?
They have s'mores flavor of Built Puffs. They do at Built, unless they might be sold out. I don't want to speak out of school here, but they exist at built.com. You can find those. And Matt, yeah, we are going to send you a little care package.
Love it. All right. Well, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Croc and I back tomorrow right here, Locked On 49ers.